Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of September, and Mondays at 9 o'clock we do all things political. This hour of the program, we'll be talking. We haven't had a chance to dissect Senator John McCain's acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention. We'll also look at these latest numbers that have been released, well, early on by CBS News, showing that the race was dead even. And according to a poll today from USA Today, Gallup, the Republican National Convention has given Senator McCain and his party a significant boost. He is now leading Barack Obama by 50-46% among registered voters. He has narrowed Obama's wide advantage on handling the economy. And he also leads by 54-44% among those who are seen as most likely to vote. We'll talk about that group of people. Before the convention, Republicans were less enthusiastic than usual about voting, and now they are more enthusiastic, which is quite a large change that narrows this Democratic advantage. Democrats report being more enthusiastic by 67-19%, Republicans 60% to 24%. We'll talk more about Governor Sarah Palin and her appearance later this week on ABC News. And we'll look at the economy and all of those issues that are most important to you as we now enter. It's been going on for a long time, the final stretch of this race for the presidency. We'll be welcoming your phone calls. Our guest this hour is Professor Michael McDonald, associate professor at George Mason University, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us by email, then all you have to do is send an email to talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And I'm sure that our lines will be busy because there's a lot of interest among those of you who listen to us regularly in this particular race. Professor Michael McDonald, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Let's start with those numbers that show that Senator McCain did get a significant boost from the Republican National Convention. What do you make of those? Leading now the Democrat, Barack Obama, by 50-46% among registered voters.
Well, definitely McCain did what he needed to do, which is energize the Republican Party coming out of its convention. It's not surprising. The Republicans had a week of solid, good coverage for them, and like when the Democrats had a solid week of good coverage for them during their convention, the polls seemed to move in their direction. And so we have seen a convention balance for both candidates. I'm not sure if they're like one canceling out the other, or it's just that we've got a lot of enthusiasm now and we're just picking that up in the polls, and there's some sort of baseline number, and it moved towards the Democrats after their convention. Now it's moved towards the Republicans after their convention, and we're going to have to really wait and see over the next week or so to see how these polls stabilize and if this is going to be something that will last, or as what usually happens with convention bounces, they are bounces, so that eventually the ball comes back down after it goes up.
Mm-hmm. There is no doubt that Republicans are more enthusiastic, as the polls attest to, and that's because of Governor Sarah Palin on the ticket. Can you talk a little bit about that, why it has resulted in much larger crowds, much more enthusiasm?
Yeah, well, this is, for somebody like myself, I study voter turnout. This is really great news for the health of our democracy in general. I mean, there's a lot of interest, a lot of enthusiasm now on both sides, the Democrat and the Republican side. So in the big picture, we're looking at a very large turnout this November, and we could perhaps get into what that means for how this election will be run. But what we're seeing, though, on with Sarah Palin, you know, whenever you have a candidate or a new political figure that comes out, they generate a lot of interest and excitement. And in this case, we really don't know a lot about her yet. And so when people don't know a lot about a candidate, what they tend to do is they have lots of blanks. It's like a, color the picture when you're a little kid. And so what you do is you just kind of fill in the colors that you think you would like to see there with that candidate. And what eventually happens is that you find out that the candidate is not exactly the way that you thought the candidate was. I mean, that's inevitably it happens because nobody is a perfect candidate for you. Obama benefited from this much earlier in the race when people didn't know a lot about him and they instilled a lot of their hopes into him. And eventually he came back down to earth. And so same thing will be going on with Sarah Palin, was that we're filling in a lot of the blank spaces with things that we hope we believe that are good for her, the country, and how we believe that the country ought to be run. But inevitably what's going to happen is that we're going to bring her back down to earth just like we bring every other candidate, and we're going to find out that she doesn't believe quite everything that we believe it to be, whoever you are, because you're nobody perfectly matches up with you except yourself.
And what issues do you think might bring her down some?
Oh, you know, it's very difficult to tell at this point. Up to this point, she's not really had to answer any questions. And you had mentioned it in the lead-in that after 2 weeks, she's finally going to do an interview with a national television host. So there are a lot of questions that she's going to have to answer. There are a lot of questions that are going to be asked of her, and that's fair. I mean, we've had a lot of vetting for all of our other three candidates up to this point. Biden was a presidential candidate. He experienced debates. Obama went through the ringer. McCain went through the ringer. Now it's time for Sarah Palin to go through the ringer, and she's up in Alaska reportedly right now with Joe Lieberman getting a crash course on foreign policy. We're going to have to see how she fares on some of these issues because, you know, frankly, Alaska, their budget in their state is not the same as the rest of the country. They get most of their taxes from taxing oil revenues, and they actually give money back to every citizen of the state. So the sort of budget issues that are facing Alaska and the sort of foreign policy issues facing Alaska are not the same as what faces the rest of the country. And so she's going to have that crash course on foreign policy. She's going to need a crash course on domestic policy. And at the end of the day, voters are going to have to make a determination on her, how they feel about her. But, you know, it's also kind of important to realize, too, that while there's all this interest and excitement about Palin, really the choice is between Obama and McCain. And that's how traditionally, once we get through this period of excitement about Palin, we're going to find that, well, there's going to be two debates between Obama and McCain, and the choice will be very clear at that point that this is a choice not between Sarah Palin and everybody else. It's really a choice between the two presidential nominees of their parties.
So the storyline, you think Professor McDonald will move off her? How long will that take?
That's a good question. looking at the cycle and seeing how already we're starting to see some questions raised, I would say, you know, we're still going to have a period of time where she dominates the news cycle, at least over the next week after she gives her first interview. I would, you know, perhaps once we get to the end of this month to Ole Miss, where we're going to have the first presidential debate in the run-up to that, maybe that's at the point where we're going to shake off this story and start focusing back on the two presidential contenders.
Mm-hmm. So when you compare the conventions, do you think they were both hits?
Yeah, they both did what they needed to do with their respective bases. So on the Democratic side, Obama had the duty to consolidate the base and bring those people who'd supported Clinton in line. And not surprisingly, I mean, despite all the drama that was made in leading up to that convention, the Clintons are pretty savvy politicians, and they did exactly what they needed to do, and they delivered really great speeches. Then you look over on the Republican side, McCain needed to energize his base, and the pick of Sarah Palin was in some ways brilliant on this because she is socially conservative, and that excited a lot of the base, and it changed the conversation entirely from the Democratic convention just the week before. So, he managed to energize his base, and that was his main goal out of this. And he also needed to reach out to independents. So that soft sell that he did on the last night of the convention, where he didn't mention Bush, he didn't really mention Republican either. He kept saying our party or my party during his speech, was really aimed at moving the party forward away from George Bush and putting a new face on it, not only just himself, but, you know, literally by bringing Palin up as his vice presidential nominee. So I think he got both the things that he needed to accomplish during his convention, too, which is excite the base and also, ironically, make an appeal to independent voters who may not actually share the same sorts of views as that base. So that was a tremendously successful convention for him as well.
Right. We'll take phone calls here in just a moment. Let's talk about one issue that we're going to discuss at length because of what's been happening to the North Pole, reports from last week, and that's an issue of global warming, which among significant numbers of people in this country is a very, very large issue, particularly among young people, but also among a lot of people, Republicans and Democrats, who are concerned about this issue. Tell me about the difference and how difficult it is for Senator McCain to be running with a woman who has a different point of view, a remarkably different point of view on that particular issue. Do they differ on so many issues that makes you wonder why he chose her?
Well, they do differ on some issues, but because we don't know a lot about her, she has an opportunity to remake her image, and so she will not be held, regrettably, I think, in some ways, accountable for many of the policy positions that she may have taken prior to being the vice presidential nominee. So she can walk back all of those positions during the vice presidential debates. By the way, though, to be fair, let's look at Obama and McCain. They've also walked back some of their policy positions, too. For Obama, say, wiretapping on McCain immigration policy or the Bush tax cut. So all these candidates do, eventually when they run in general elections, they do walk back from the base where they were running for in the primaries to a more general election-friendly policy platform. Palin, because she comes from a heavily Republican state, conservative state, it's her walking back is a little bit, her path is longer to walk back than some of the other candidates, but it is a path that she will attempt to walk back on. So I expect that what we're going to see during this vice presidential debate is that she tries to repackage herself on some of these issues that she may have taken different stands in the past.
And what about, you mentioned Senator Obama walking back. What about walking back as you talked about wiretapping? He's also said recently, made comments about the surge working better than expected. He's talking about maybe changing a little bit his position on tax cuts. Is he upsetting his base as well?
Well, this is the risk that any presidential candidate takes, that when they move away from the base, that they are going to appeal to independents, but at the same time, they're going to lose some of these people who are very diehard supporters on some of these issues.
Right.
And, you know, if somebody is a person who volunteers and gives money to the candidates and really believes in these issues, sometimes it's very upsetting that to them to see the candidate seem to flip-flop on issues because they care so deeply about these issues that they care more about the issues than the party. That's what happens with activists who are on both sides. So, yes, there's definitely the potential that some of these people will be turned off by either candidate on either side when their candidate moves more towards the center.
Let's go to phone calls. Our guest is Professor Michael McDonald, Associate Professor at George Mason University, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. It's our All Things Political Hour, and we're welcoming your phone calls. You'll be able to get through after someone hangs up. We're filled right now, but here is the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Care to send an email? You can do that at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the next hour of our program, there was a major report yesterday showing that open water now stretches all the way around the Arctic, making it possible for the first time in human history to circumnavigate the North Pole. Observers from the U.S. federal government are doing were doing a whale survey in mid-August, and they reported seeing 9 polar bears swimming off Alaska's northwest coast. Bears were between 20 and 100 kilometers from shore. Some were swimming north, apparently trying to reach the polar ice shelf, which was more than 600 kilometers away. Polar bears can swim 100 kilometers before they become extremely tired. We'll be talking with a research assistant at the National Snow and Ice Data Center, and that's coming up the second hour of our program. Professor Michael McDonald here now, Associate Professor, George Mason University, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and we start our calls with Jim from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Progressives, if you want to end abuse, you have to name it and you have to network it. Examples from the convention. One speaker said, "I didn't go to a fancy school like Obama." The hidden racist message here is that Obama is an uppity N-word who is better than us. Common sense tells you that if a person was smart enough to get into a great institution and then smart enough to get to do well at a great institution, that that should reflect well on him. Rudy Giuliani lied, saying that Obama didn't think that Alaska was cosmopolitan enough, and then also the adulterer Giuliani referred to religion. Karl Rove, who represents people who are are members of country clubs and, in fact, own country clubs, characterized Obama sitting there with a drink in his hand looking down on people. And finally, Palin lied about the community organizer thing, saying that there are no duties to this. In reality, community organizers have to recruit, they have to do fundraising, budgeting, they delegate tasks, and they train people. It's the essence of what you do in government.
Professor McDonald.
Well, so the Republicans have launched again into the culture wars of pitting elitists versus the common man. And so that was the theme out of their convention, and they have a right during their convention to make those claims, and it's the duty of the Democrats and Obama to push back on it. And I'm reading a really fascinating book right now called Red State, Blue State, Rich State, Poor State, and it actually takes on this notion that people at the lower end of the income spectrum are somehow Republican in some way. And when you actually look at the numbers, even in some of the red states, we have this perception because the red states tend to be poorer and the blue states tend to be richer. You have this elitism that is prevalent in the blue states, and the blue states are looking down upon the red states. Actually, that's not true. What you find is that the poor people across the entire country favor the Democrat position. What really is going on here with these elitism and other claims is a culture war that's happening among elites themselves. So it's kind of ironic here that it's the wealthier people, the middle class and wealthier people, who have varying larger views between Democrats and Republicans, and where in wealthier states you find the wealthier tend to be more supportive of Democrats, and in the red states you find the wealthier more supportive of the Republicans. So it's this culture war is actually kind of a false consciousness, if you will, of what's really going on in the electorate, because the poor people who are out there actually do support the Democrats, even in red states.
Is elitism a euphemism for uppity, and what do you think, his name escapes me right now, of the use of the word uppity by the Georgia member of Congress?
Yeah, who claimed that he didn't realize it was a racist term.
Right. Where
Georgia,
are you living?
You don't know that.
Yeah.
Well, clearly there's a segment of the population out there who are not going to vote for Obama because he is African-American. It's just a sad fact of our state of our culture that we still haven't gotten over that barrier. One thing I'd say about that is because a lot of people say, well, you look at the polls and you have to subtract some number because there's this what we call the Bradley Wilder effect, where the polls tend to overstate African-American support in the electorate, I mean, at least for African-American candidate. We actually don't see a lot of that in current polling. That is something that happened back in the 80s. Now we don't see that sort of effect. People actually have a reason, if they're not going to vote for Obama for racial reasons, they're going to give you some other reason, maybe it's that he's, you know, not maybe uppity, but presumptuous or something like that, some other code words. But yes, there are some people out there who either they're speaking in code or in some cases are actually telling pollsters that they are not going to vote for an African-American. So Barack Obama does have a disadvantage in the electorate. He should be doing much better given the state of the economy and the state of where the country finds itself in terms of a war. And maybe it's the African-American phenomenon that's happening to him, a little bit of racism. But it's also the fact that McCain does appeal to independents. If the Republicans could have nominated any candidate that would be able to win the election, McCain would be it. So while I'm not going to go all the way and say that if Obama is defeated, it's because of racism in the United States, but it probably will have played at least some factor in the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim, for your call. Laura from Madison, hi.
Hi. You know, I heard your guest talking about issues versus the party. I mean, aren't we supposed to vote for issues and not necessarily vote for a certain party? I'm wondering how Senator McCain is the maverick he claims to be, because it seems to me that he's towing precisely the party line.
Yes, well, so that's a good question as well. So when people vote for political candidates and for political parties, often they don't have a lot of information about the candidates themselves. So what do they do? And, you know, this is not your listeners for your show. This is the people who aren't paying really much attention to politics and are going to start paying attention now that we're in this home stretch. And
right.
So for those people who really are not political junkies, what do? They use partisanship as a cue to help them make their voting decisions. And so despite the fact that McCain may try and label himself as a maverick, what some people are going to do is they're going to base the decision that they have because of the party label, the D or the R. And it's really McCain's challenge then to, and Obama to some extent, to appeal to independents, to walk themselves away from that party label. And so the maverick candidate, that image, that's something that he cultivates in order to walk away from this Republican label at a time when Republicans are not particularly well-liked within the electorate. However, one other thing about that, if we look at the most latest polling, there does seem to be a resurgence towards the Republican Party. So while we, all through the summer and last year and the last couple years, really, we've looked at Republicans, their party ID declining in the electorate, as we get closer to the election, we're starting to see a rally effect of Republicans back to their candidate, which is actually something I would have expected, because even though these Republicans have been unenthused by their party and the Bush, when you get closer to election, people will revert back to their normal partisanship.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting, considering the fact this current president, has such phenomenally low approval ratings?
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, look back at McCain's speech. The words George and Bush did not happen together in his speech. And
right.
Very rarely did he say even the word Republican. He would say our party or my party. Clearly, he did not want independents who were watching his speech to at all associate himself with the current administration. And that, again, that's his best strategy in order to win the election. And it's Obama's duty, responsibility to point out, well, he actually is a Republican, and these are the things that Republicans have done over the last 8 years. So this is the debate that we will have in at least two presidential election debates coming up.
Thanks, Laura, for the call. Peter from Stevens Point, hi.
Hi, this is Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Yeah, good morning to you both. And Professor McDonald just already touched a little bit on my and also the previous caller. I believe that these two candidates are heavy right-wing conservative dressed in moderates clothing, And as the professor said, they're probably going to have to go back to their base. But just a couple of items on Sarah Palin. It hasn't been widely reported, but she quoted, she labeled the war in Iraq, quote, a task from God. She includes rape and incest victims in her desired total ban on abortions. She's attempted censorship as a mayor. That's Ms. Palin. That's pretty far right-wing conservative. And John McCain, I don't hear about this much because he fired his former chief economic advisor, Phil Graham, but that was only after Graham called Americans a nation, quote, a nation of whiners. Phil Graham, and this is touches on today's news, was the designer of the loophole in the 2000 Commodities and Futures Modernization Act that led directly to Enron, and he authored the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act. That's the very piece of legislation that spawned this current mortgage crisis. Now, that's what McCain had for his chief economic. I don't know what he's got now, but this is what has been leading him on his platform. It's just as far, you know, right wing and Republican as I think as you can get.
Do you agree, Professor McDonald?
Well, this is exactly why the McCain campaign has not allowed Palin to be interviewed yet, and the only speeches she's been given have been giving are speeches that are taken directly from her convention speech, and she's using teleprompters still. So they do not want her to have to answer any of these questions until they figure out how they're going to have her respond to them. So right now she's being coached, and they're trying to they're going to work through answers to all these questions, and they're going to have her try and walk back on some of these positions. And again, we, you know, for better or worse, the American electorate seems to sometimes have a very short attention span, and since we don't know a lot about Palin, it's likely that whatever answers that she gives, if they're sufficient good enough, we'll probably forget about her previous positions on many of these issues, unless there's some videotape someplace that we can put up, because that seems to be the most reliable way to get people to pay attention.
Yeah.
But again, you go back to it's the duty of the Democrats to point this out. It's they can't rely on the McCain campaign or the Palin campaign to give out bad information about their candidates. And, you know, just one other thing about this, because in a larger sense, people often complain about negative advertising, and actually the public's smarter than what you often hear pundits say. The public can differentiate between a negative ad, which is a personal attack, versus a negative ad, which is actually on substance and policy, and they don't actually view the latter as a negative attack on a candidate. And so it really is the duty of the Democrats at this point to get that information out there and to start putting out some of the policy positions, because there's this window here where Palin is not making herself available to the media, where she has not been able to take back some of these positions, and the Obama campaign has this opportunity right now to frame her. And if they don't do that, then they're going to lose this opportunity. In fact, I was quite surprised that on Friday the Obama campaign did not do something more forceful with some advertising or some big flashy event or something to change the conversation from the Republican convention, much like McCain did with the Palin pick on the Friday of the week before. Believe me, the Democrats had months and months to prepare for what was going to happen on that Friday after the Republican convention. So I'm kind of surprised that they did not do that, and that the initial information we were getting out of the campaign is that they were taking a wait-and-see attitude on Palin. That is not going to win you the election. And if the Obama campaign does not sharpen its attacks, then the McCain campaign is going to have free rein to frame their candidate the way that they want to frame her, and it's going to be a very difficult position for the Obama campaign. Mm-hmm. So I expect we're going to see in the next couple of days stronger attacks. If that does not happen, then, this is not going to be an easy election for Obama.
Mm-hmm. Well, they probably didn't know who she was either.
you can still do some things. You can, whether or not they're true or not, you can still make attacks, as we've seen. So they could have still put out some negative information about her in television ads, and they could have done that really quick. They've shown the capability of doing that already. So why they're not doing it, I really don't
understand. That's interesting. Don't you think it's interesting that Joel Lieberman is being sent to brief her in an attempt, is it, to make her into a Joel Lieberman, because indications are that's the guy who McCain wanted?
Well, yeah, that's actually kind of interesting, isn't it? Let's look. In terms of who would you have brief her, there aren't a lot of choices at this point. So you could have Lieberman. You could have Lindsey Graham. You could even have Bill Graham, for that matter. He doesn't need to be affiliated with the campaign, but he could be up there talking to her about economic policy. I wouldn't be surprised if he was up there, quite frankly. But it can't be the candidate, because he's got to be out on the trail. So, I guess Lieberman does make a wise choice when you think about it, because, you know, wise in terms of who do they have they can go to the well, who has a lot of policy experience and can give a crash course on domestic policy and foreign policy, a senator like Lieberman or Graham or a Lindsey Graham, somebody like that, would be probably the best choices.
Right. Peter, thanks for your call. Robert is next from Greenleaf. Hi, Robert.
Well, good morning. I have a comment, and I'm interested in your response. All of this blathering is getting rather sickening. The Republicans, since Ronald Reagan and maybe before, have one tactic and one game. It's called bully and intimidate, and they pull out God as their bludgeon and shield. And the Democrats, and you are correct, they are so elitist that they can't quite create a defense and or a response to this that the common man, you and I, can understand what and accept what the real threat here is. And, you know, it's time that we all vote for Willie Nelson. He's the only person that is real and offers anything for us. Goodbye.
Thanks for the call.
Well, you know, thinking about third-party candidates, when we look at the poll, say that latest USA Today Gallup poll, the Obama numbers actually remain pretty much the same, within the margin of error. His support number from the previous poll went from among registered voters from 47 to 46. McCain's numbers among registered went from 43 to 50. So what's likely happening here is that some of those people who are parking on Bob Barr or some of the other, maybe even Ralph Nader, who didn't want to vote for McCain, suddenly have made up their mind and shifted, at least temporarily, to McCain. Now, the good news is that these were supporters who are somewhat weak in their support for McCain because they were not supporting him before. And notice again how Obama's numbers have not really gone down. It's just that McCain's numbers have risen significantly. So that support's pretty soft, which does tell you that Obama has an opportunity to make some attacks, sharpen the contrasts with McCain, and he can pull those numbers back down. We may be right now at a high point of where McCain possibly could be in the election, given that he's had this tremendous week last week. And by the way, you know, thinking again, just to pull out for just 1 second on his side, McCain didn't just have a good week last week. He had a very good month last month, if you think about it. The beginning of the month was the celebrity attacks, which put Obama on the defensive. Then Obama went on hiatus for the Olympics, and there was the Georgia crisis. And then Obama finally had a good week with the convention, and we had McCain put his foot in his mouth about the number of homes he owned, which kind of energized the Democrats after 2 weeks of good McCain coverage. And then we had another good week for McCain. So, mm-hmm. You know, the movement in the polls is actually, it's quite remarkable. It's close as it is in some ways, because McCain has had a tremendously good August. I expect that these numbers that we're looking at right now, this is soft support for McCain. There is a chance for Obama to walk it back. The bad news for Obama is that, in the polling, he he has generally not ever broken through the 50%. He did so just briefly after the Democratic convention. And if you look back at the exit polling during the primaries, people who made up their minds in the last 1 to 3 days tended to break towards Clinton. And so I've always been curious as whether or not the fact that Obama couldn't break through the 50% mark and the fact that maybe that there are these undecided voters who just needed a reason to vote for McCain, they'll break for him if they're given the chance, or if as we get closer into the actual election day, that they may also break back towards him as well.
Our guest this hour for All Things Political is Professor Michael McDonald, Associate Professor, George Mason University, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. All Things Political today, looking at the Republican National Convention, looking at polls that show that Senator John McCain and Georgia Governor Sarah Palin have gone up in the polls, some would say rather significantly. And we're looking, we have to talk about the economy, too. What does it mean, the government bailout? We run the risk of framing everything in political terms, but I guess that's what happens a few weeks before an election. Does the government bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac help one party or the other? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming at the second hour of our program this Monday, we'll speak with a research scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Last week came reports that Arctic sea ice is melting at an alarming rate. Some scientists have little hope that the downward trend can be reversed before the ice disappears altogether. We'll be talking about ice coverage in this region at its second lowest level in 30 years. Back to your phone calls now for Professor Michael McDonald, and we go next to Will from Windsor. Hi, Will.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Captain.
Sure.
I have comment I'd like to make, and then a response to follow. I think the corporate media has not been holding these candidates accountable. I was at McCain's town hall meeting in Racine, and I took a piece of his legislation that he sponsored, and I think it was 1998, which was legislation that removed 12,000 Dene people, the Navajo, from their land in Arizona, so Peabody Mining could mine that area. And the area they relocated them to was a contaminated area. The United Nations condemned this and said it was the worst relocation since the internment of the Japanese during World War II. So I asked McCain about this, and he kicked it aside as if it was nothing except a land rights issue between the natives, and all the information speaks otherwise. When the media showed the town hall meeting, they didn't put anything about that question in the public so the public could see it. They went to a question what a young lady said, a response she said, that Obama terrifies her. So I think until the media get down to the meat and bones of what these candidates have sponsored and the actions they've taken, that will have a problem. The other issue I have is I spent more time in the military than John McCain did, and we hear him being called a hero. And when I remember of how he used the Green Bay Packers line when he was here and, say, when he was in prison in Hanoi, a prisoner of war, and he also used the Pittsburgh Steelers lineup, that's a direct violation of the uniform of the code of conduct for the military, because if you are a prisoner of war, you're supposed to only give name, rank, service number, and date of birth. So by him going beyond that, it was a violation of that, but yet the media has not called him on it. And I would like the response.
All right,
thanks,
Will.
For taking my call.
Sure, Will. Thanks.
Well, again, it comes back to the fact that it's the Democrats' responsibility, it's the Obama campaign's responsibility to sharpen these contrasts and expose McCain's record. So if they choose not to run commercials that, and they have a lot of money, Obama has plenty enough money to run as many commercials as he wishes on different issues. If he chooses not to make these distinctions, then that's a choice that the campaign is making, probably for tactical reasons, because they think that there are other issues that they believe are more important. To go back to this question, though, in a larger context, again, about what's the role of the media, unfortunately, we've seen since the 1950s, can you imagine back in the 1950s, maybe some of your listeners can, back when the networks didn't have a lot of television programming, so they used campaigns as a way of almost like reality television and just would show debates or stump speeches entirely without any sort of editing on them on their newscasts. And you know, so we were talking about like 15 minutes, half an hour of sort of coverage that they would give complete coverage to speeches. Today, it's all soundbite, and unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast when these campaigns, or actually the media, I should say, have to compete with other forms of entertainment, and so they rationally kind of realize that they can't put McCain or even Obama up for half an hour, 30 minutes on television unfiltered in this sort of way and expect to have their ratings maintained. So they've been a little bit better, at least the cable television show. It's been a little bit better this cycle, I would say, than last cycle, of showing these events pretty much unfiltered and uncensored. But still, when you get over to the evening news broadcast, and that's where most people get their news from, they don't. It's only political junkies are tuning over to the cable news channels. Most people get their news from the network television evening programs, and they tend to distill it down to soundbites. So most people out there, not the political junkies, are getting their information in just soundbites and in little eyedroppers of information. So that does make it difficult for people to make informed decisions. But on the other hand, I would, for better or worse, people unfortunately don't really become informed fully when they're making these decisions. They have many things going on in their lives, and they don't have the time to become informed on every possible issue that's facing them. So they're going to look at the big issues. They're going to look at some of the personalities. For better or worse, that's the case of where we are, and they're going to make their decisions based on that.
Right. On the other hand, there are people like us and our audience who've watched thousands of hours by now, don't you think? Thousands of hours. The other comment I wanted to make was he brought about the Green Bay Packers reference and the Pittsburgh Steelers reference. It seems to me as though the Democrats just can't touch that war record hero. It was reinforced so strongly at the Republican National Convention. That is how he is identified by the American people, and it would be very hard to successfully poke holes in that.
Yeah, well, in some ways I don't want to go there because I don't want to disparage his service. And I think Obama probably feels the same way, that it's not winning issue for him to disparage McCain's service at all. That said, McCain did a long time ago, and people that know him, I don't know him personally, but I do know other people that know him personally, have said that McCain said he would never use his service as a crutch to run for political office, and he's doing that very much right now. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little unsettling to see someone so blatantly use their background as a response to every criticism that's thrown his way. It's almost it almost becomes a parody with Giuliani and the 9/11 syndrome that he had, where he couldn't say a sentence without the word 9/11 in it. He does bring up his military service quite a bit. Again, we are a nation that honors its the people who have served the country, and so that service that he's given deserves its respect. It's when it's used too much that it becomes questionable as to whether or not it's relevant for everything that he stands for.
Right. Thanks, Will, very much for your call. We go to Troy from Thorpe next. Hi, Troy.
Hi. I just wanted to ask the professor how much he thinks that the population tunes in. I've heard this before. After Labor Day and prior to Labor Day, everything is sort of, just fluffy and all pretty. And then after that, people really tune in. And sometimes I think that maybe now we're tuning in, and do we not maybe like some of Obama's policies? I know I was really, he was really appealing to me until I realized how far center left he is. He's not even center left. I think he's far left. And then I dig into what an actual community organizer does. And, I mean, I'm not too for electing a president. That part of it, you know, some of it's great, this community organizing. But, you know, when I hear that the community organizing also involves getting people signed up for rent subsidies, heat, and food stamps, welfare, you know, that really is not, I don't think, the direction of what a center-right country wants to go. And I say, no way now. There's no way. And is this what's going on now with Obama? Because I had heard that if they mess this up, it's because of their policy issues. And I don't know. I just would like to know if this is where the professor thinks this thing is going, and that's why.
Professor McDonald.
Well, the irony with Obama and his community organizing is that he did it through a church. So it's a faith-based initiative, actually, is the way in which the Republicans would frame this if it wasn't Obama that was running for office and that they had to disparage that service that he made. So in some respects, I look at the attacks that have been made on Obama as, and you even look at the, I don't know, maybe the word hypocritical does come up because you look at Palin and her personal life. Again, this is not the sort of story that a typical Republican would be advocating for. And also one other thing about this this liberal conservative or the issue. There's a National Journal analysis that has Obama being the most liberal member of the Senate, which has actually been widely criticized among academics as really cherry-picking the votes that Obama was engaged in. So if you were actually look at the all of the votes that he's taken rather than just the few that they looked at, he looks to be about the median of his party, which is actually not surprising. You find that the candidates and McCain, by the way, looks to be about the median of his party too. McCain is just about as conservative as Obama is liberal from the center of the American electorate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the nature of the beast. These people have to get through their primaries, and if they're too liberal or too conservative, more often than not, they actually cannot win those primaries. So I would not look at Obama as being as liberal as the caller was making him out to be.
Thanks, Troy, for the call. Jack from Eagle River is next. Hi, Jack.
Yes, good morning. I'll talk fast.
Okay.
The Republicans weren't afraid to pick on Kerry and make up stuff about his war record. So come on, we got to play fair here and be direct about McCain as much as possible. After that, I mean, that Swift boat thing was an absolute tragedy. Second thing is, my wife and I have an agreement that she'll hide all sharp objects if Republicans pull this off again. That'll be on Election Day. My real comment is that the gun people are going to go for the gun-toting VP, and I'm hoping that they would have voted that way anyway. Maybe they'll just turn out in bigger numbers.
Yes, actually, your question reminded me of the first part of the previous caller's question, which was about when people are paying attention. And so I do want to address that. We had about 40 million people watch these convention speeches. So that's pretty good, 40
mm-hmm.
million people. That's up from 2004. The debates will be at least twice that number of people, and if not more. So we could be looking at 80 to 100 million people watching the first presidential debate. So, yes. What's going to happen between now and Election Day is that people, it's hard to believe this, but people are actually going to start tuning in even more to this presidential election, and the interest will rise even more as we get closer to the actual election day. That's how it's been in the past. That's how it will be most likely in this election as well. I hope that your wife doesn't do a lot of sewing in terms of so that she doesn't need the scissors around, because this is going to be a close election, and she's probably going to be wanting to cut her own throat because it's going to be so close and nail-biting that it's going to be very difficult and painful, I think, for people on both sides to watch, because all indications are that this is going to be a close election. It could, however, after these debates, it could break one way or another. A lot of people have said that this looks like a 1980 election where Reagan needed to assuage the American public that he wasn't going to take the country into war. And once he looked very reasonable in the debates, everything cleared up and the race broke for Reagan quite decisively. There are a lot of questions swirling around Barack Obama right now. And if he does manage to clear up these questions in the debates...
We have 5 seconds.
Yes, there could be quite a break towards Obama.
All right. Well, here we go. Thanks very much for being with us. It was an interesting hour. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Professor Michael McDonald from George Mason University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production as well. We'll return following the news from National Public Radio with more conversation.